And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your front range morning news program here on Community Radio, KGNU. It's Friday, January 17th. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hannah Lee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about the Women's March happening tomorrow in Denver. Then, a report from last night's public meeting on air quality that took place in Longmont. And to round out this morning's show, we'll hear about the business of mental health with a local psychotherapist who speaks later today in Boulder on the propagation of pharmaceuticals when it comes to mental health and some of the myths underlying their popularity. At 8:30 on Connections, American politics specialist and chair of the CU Denver Department of Political Science, Tony Robinson, will talk about the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump and the 2020 Democratic presidential primaries and caucuses. Tune in and call in this morning at 8:30 on Connections to join that conversation. But first, at 5 minutes past 8 o'clock, we bring you your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
Crestone Peak Resources announced on Thursday it will install air quality monitors at all its horizontal fracking sites throughout the state as they try to prove oil and gas developments are not as big a contributor to the Front Range's diminishing air quality. The monitors will provide around-the-clock air quality data. The Daily Camera reports that Crestone wants to get the data to the public before the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission's next oil and gas rulemaking hearings in April and May. According to Crestone's own testing, the results were a bit different to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment findings. Boulder County is considering enacting a fracking ban using the new powers granted in Senate Bill 181. But the bill says it is to ensure that oil and gas development in operations in Colorado are regulated. Therefore, Governor Jared Polis and the legislative leadership said that the bill is to regulate, not to ban fracking. Two environmental activist groups, Our Health, Our Future, Our Longmont, and Food and Water Watch, are challenging the legality of a ban in Boulder County District Court. They would support a ban if the negative health consequences can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. A state committee will be meeting today behind closed doors to consider possible changes to how criminal records are sealed in Colorado. Lucy Haggard has more.
A Colorado Judicial Branch committee will consider a new rule regarding the suppression and sealing of criminal records today. According to a working draft posted online, the Rules of Criminal Procedure Committee still hasn't decided on the threshold that justifies obscuring or redacting a record from the public. The four legal terms under consideration are compelling, significant, substantial, and overriding. Currently, Colorado does not have a consistent mode to moderate access to criminal court records. Jeff Roberts, executive director of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, addressed the issue in a column in the Colorado Independent on Thursday. He expressed concern that the final rule could restrict public access to court records and prevent the public from attending future hearings on the subject. Regardless of the threshold, a court order would have to show that sealing or suppressing the record serves an interest that outweighs the public interest. It would also have to prove that there aren't less restrictive options available. If the committee ultimately recommends a new rule, the proposal will come before the Colorado Supreme Court and would likely have a public hearing before it's adopted. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Haggard.
On Thursday, an extreme risk protection order petition filed by Susan Holmes against the Colorado State University police officer who fatally shot her son Jeremy Holmes in 2017 was denied on the grounds that Holmes did not have standing to file the order. The Denver Post reports that Susan Holmes filed the petition under the state's new red flag law against CSU police officer Philip Morris on January 9th. Protection orders can be granted for people who have been determined by the courts to pose a significant risk to themselves or others. Jeremy Holmes was shot and killed by Morris and another Fort Collins police officer on July 1st, 2017. The 8th Judicial District Court's office ruled that the officers used use of force was justified and they were cleared of wrongdoing. Ms. Holmes marked on the protection order petition the option that Holmes and the officer shared a child in common. In a sworn affidavit submitted by the Attorney General's office, Morris said he did not have a child in common with Susan Holmes. Howard dismissed the case since there was not clear and convincing evidence that they shared a child in common. And in today's weather, there's patchy blowing snow or dust because there is a high wind warning today starting at 11 this morning and going through the day and ending around 2 a.m. Saturday. A chance of rain and snow showers before 1 o'clock this afternoon and a chance of rain and snow through the rest of the day. High today in the low 50s. On Saturday, mostly sunny, high around the low 40s, and winds calming to 10 miles an hour. And then Sunday, sunny with a high around 50 degrees. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And you're listening to your independent community radio station, KGNU. Tomorrow, the 4th Denver Women's March takes place. But unlike previous years, it won't be followed by a rally. Instead, there will be an impact expo. Angela Astiel with the Denver Women's March told us why.
We wanted to take some time to create a rally that was meaningful to the community. Reaching out and working on building some coalitions with community partners to put together that rally come later this year. And the second reason is that we really heard from our base about the importance of how they could get involved. A lot of folks are, you know, they come down and they march and, you know, they're excited and there's all this energy and then they go home. So we were really looking for opportunities to channel the energy, and the expo was just a natural fit. And special thanks to McNichols Building, Denver Arts and Venues, for allowing us to be at the space, which is right on site at Civic Center. So instead of marching to the rally, we're asking folks to march with us right inside McNichols and visit the expo.
I know the expo will highlight 8 specific categories. Take us through what those are and why they were selected.
As part of our, you know, community conversations throughout the year, and also recognizing that we were going to have capacity, there's so many issues that impact women. And if, you know, in a perfect world, we'd be able to highlight everything. But as a way to bring some focus to the event, we really narrowed down the sort of the topic areas by doing a survey with our base last year. So we asked them late last fall, like, what topic areas they were interested in so that they would be able to give that feedback and we'd be able to build the expo from that. And so, for example, the topic areas that folks called out for us were climate change, reproductive rights, voting, the importance of voting, immigration reform, gun safety, domestic violence and sexual assault, and then arts and activism.
So outside of what's happening on Saturday, what other opportunities are there throughout the year for people who are, you know, who were first really motivated by that first Women's March 4 years ago?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that we're being very conscientious of is not to create too much additional programming to a world that a lot of awesome, awesome things exist. I have, you know, been connected through so many great organizations throughout this experience and even prior to that. I know of lots of different events that are happening every night of the week. And we certainly don't want to add too much to, you know, folks' plates, because we recognize most people have other things that they're also trying to balance in life. And so for us, our impact is really about leveraging the platform to get the word out about what's happening. And so to that end, all of the organizations that are participating in the expo will have links associated with their websites from our website. We're hoping to have a video available. We're doing live streaming the day of the march. So for folks that physically can't get into the building because of capacity, they can hop on Facebook or Instagram and be able to check out what these organizations are doing in the community by watching the live stream. And then we're also hoping to tape that and make that available on a YouTube channel for even later than what live stream allows, so that there are plenty of opportunities for folks to get connected. As far as our own programming, we're really putting our next focus and attention on creating that rally to be able to be the right energy to get people together and activated to vote. Voter registration is a big part of this year. Obviously, our theme is our vote is our voice. Let's get loud. And we really need people to register and come out and support that effort. But we recognize that January is a long way away from November. And to harness that energy and keep it going forward, we're looking at other potentially youth-led rally or youth-led events that will really galvanize people to come out and then figure out like a partner to the polls kind of model. Like, not only can you, you know, what can you do to get yourself to the polls, but who in your neighborhood can you pick up a ballot for and drop that off on your way? Figure out how to make voting accessible by the action part of it. It is, of all the states, Colorado is incredibly progressive in terms of availability of ballots early on and the ability to mail in a ballot. We're like, definitely we try to make it as easy as possible from a state perspective. But what can we do as individuals to encourage folks to vote? One of the ideas is, you know, don't just vote your party, but have a voting party. One of the messages that we're you're gonna see us put out there as we continue forward with leveraging the platform.
Angela Astill with the Denver Women's March. The fourth annual one takes place tomorrow. The march begins at 10 a.m. at the corner of 14th Avenue and Bannock Street. As we heard, it will be followed by an impact expo. You can find out more at womensmarchdenver.org. That's W-O-M-X-N-S, marchdenver.org. Last night in Longmont, community members gathered to hear from local elected officials and researchers on the issue of air quality in Boulder County. Monitoring that has been happening at the Boulder Reservoir for the past 3 years shows significant pollution coming from neighboring Weld County, which is the most fracked county in the state. Former State Representative Joe Salazar, who is now the executive director of Colorado Rising, spoke at last night's meeting and told the crowd that the fight to control the oil and gas industry lies with communities, as the industry will seek to once again outspend any ballot measure or legislation that challenges it.
That's what this is about. I mean, they might have a ton of money, but having community power is worth all the money in the world. And that's what we need to have, is we need to have that community power to be able to have communities fight for themselves in this battle against the oil and gas industry. We know how abusive they are as an industry, and the fact that they really don't care what community members think. And so these people here who are in this cafeteria, it seems that they are pretty motivated to fight for themselves.
You mentioned in your talk that we're already seeing the oil and gas industry spending a lot of money, that there's advertising on commercial radio about how great the oil and gas industry is. Prop 112, when that was on the ballot in 2018, was so outspent by the oil and gas industry. I mean, give us a sense of the scope, because we're well ahead of even anything being on the ballot, and we're already seeing money being spent in a campaign essentially to overturn it.
Yeah, so I imagine that the oil and gas industry is going to be spending tens of millions to possibly hundreds of millions of dollars this next go around here in the state of Colorado. Money, quite frankly, they don't have. I mean, we know that they're underwater quite a bit. Just take a look at their financials. But, you know, they're going to fight for themselves. And it's already started, as I indicated, that we know that they have the radio ads up. And we're just going to have to battle back. We have to battle against the misinformation that they put out there. We know that this industry is so used to lying to the public in order to gain their profits. And so we just have to get the right information out there to the people.
Now, you're a former state legislator, so you know exactly what happens under the dome. Some of the challenges that, you know, are facing legislators when they're really trying to take on the industry. We did see the passage of Senate Bill 181, but what would you like to see that could either further some of those regulations that were passed last year, either strengthen them or even go even further?
So I'm going to work with what we have. You know, 181, as I said, gave us a bunch of tools to work with, and I've been using those tools, been wielding them to some pretty good effect. And that's what I'm looking at this point, the ballot initiatives. But the rulemaking is going to be really super critical. We have huge rulemaking happening in April when it comes to mission change over at the COGCC. That's where the rubber meets the road right there. And we're going to be a part of that rulemaking as we move forward.
And is that something members of the public can either get involved in, have their voices heard, or really be paying attention to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People have the right to go in front of their government, whether it's the legislature, or whether it's governor, or whether it's the COGCC, and fight for themselves. And there is an ability for people to have public comment during these rulemakings.
Joe Salazar, Executive Director of Colorado Rising, speaking to KGNU after a public meeting last night in Longmont on air quality as a result of fracking. And you can go to news.kgnu.org to hear our continuing coverage of this issue, including a report filed yesterday, which includes some of the data that has been gathered at Boulder Reservoir over the last 3 years, looking at some of the pollution coming from Weld County associated with oil and gas activity. Pharmaceuticals for mental illness is a multi-billion dollar industry, and many people feel that drugs are overprescribed, being the first step in treatment rather than the last. The business of mental health will be under discussion later today at the Jewish Community Center of Boulder as part of the monthly interface program. Maeve Conran spoke with the presenter, Michael Altman, a local psychotherapist who has worked in private practice and in local jails and schools. He will be speaking about the medication conundrum. Does it serve or inhibit being well?
Prozac, of course, was like a big opening act in the 1980s, and they had a brilliant campaign, and their brilliant campaign as a marketing approach was about people having a chemical imbalance, and having a chemical imbalance absolves us of any particular personal responsibility. It's not my fault. You know, I have, you know, brown hair and a chemical imbalance. It's just the way it is, you know, and So the sense of the stigma of like being troubled is no longer a personal responsibility. So when you speak about a chemical imbalance, it's just an organic sort of aberration. It's altogether fabricated. It's not true. There's no such thing as a chemical baseline. Like we have a, you know, temperature 98.6, homeostatically speaking. There's no such thing like that with the chemistry of the body.
Well, there is this thing around something like dopamine. Now,
yes.
know, playing into maybe some of the PR from some of those pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
But, you know, maybe if your dopamine isn't at the right level, that's maybe contributing to some of your mental health problems. I mean, there are...
Oh, of course, there are chemicals, there are neurotransmitters, you know, there's things going on in our bodies all the time, but all the time. And so much of that is actually a response or expression of stress. And, you know, all of us are always going through a different chemical wash, I would say, of like responding to our environment and our circumstances. So it's not as if you could... You know, like you dip your toe in the water and this is, you know, what the chemistry is going to be like. It's always different like that.
So as a result, do you think we have an over-prescription of drugs for those issues, for depression, for anxiety and different things like that?
Well, it's too much of a first step go-to kind of thing. Like, I think we're very reactive like that because it's good business. I mean, the best business is when you have repeat customers, when you could sign somebody up for 10, 20 years of Prozac, Lexapro, whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. And if that's not enough to win people over as far as like their treatment, then you could talk about it being a genetic aberration or genetically caused. And that's not true either. You know, genetics are leaned on a lot of times to explain everything. And as I've said to many a client, if it was simply a genetic issue, I'm out of business. What am I going to do? You know, I don't do that CRISPR technique or whatever to modify the genes. So that was another one of those fabrications. And there's a third myth, actually, which is about brain abnormality. But none of these things have ever truly been validated. You know, there's been a lot of research because they'd love to finally come up with something that could substantiate the PR, but it's not there to be had.
We are seeing more in mainstream discussion an idea that physical health is very much tied to mental health.
eating better can improve some of your mental health issues, certainly when it comes to some of those things, anxiety and depression, exercise, just being outside, mindfulness practices. As you said, very often it's the pharmaceutical choice or option that can be the first step. But are we seeing a change where maybe some of those other steps are taken with the pharmaceutical option maybe being the last option?
Well, nobody's getting rich on somebody taking a walk and, you know, changing their diet so fast. You know, again, and absolutely what you're saying is true, that there are, and from some research that I've come across, they'll say that exercise and mindfulness, let's say, or exercise and changing a diet would be as significant an influence on improving one's mental health as the medication. Another thing to consider, and this is, I think, really critical, which I really want to go into in my talk, which moves even beyond the business, but into the psychology and spirituality, I would say also, is that if you, medication is really designed to alleviate the symptom. It's a very allopathic model. It's the medical model, which is essentially alleviate the symptom, but it doesn't explore the root causes or what's actually generating the symptom. And the symptom being, of course, anxiety or depression and, you know, bipolar, whatever we want to call the condition. And in my own way of working as a psychotherapist, I think my responsibility is to respect the symptom, is to see it as, I'll call it the inarticulate language of the body. And it needs to be deciphered. It needs to be welcomed. It needs to be worked with. And it's worked with through the channels of awareness, like receive it. So it's not a, because most people feel stigmatized and they're afraid to even share a lot of what's going on with them because they think they're too weird or too disturbed. And we hide. We hide from one another. I welcome it. I love it. I love the person, honestly. You know, I feel like, let's explore this. I'm not there to sit in judgment. And most therapists, of course, are not. But there's still usually tends to be more of a medical model, even in psychotherapy. Let's see how to, oh, you're very anxious. Well, just take some deep breaths. Well, maybe not. Maybe the person needs to do something else to explore how their body is functioning and what's on their mind while that's happening and what else are they experiencing in their body, and encourage it. That's the other thing. If we amplify symptoms, that's what I have found to be the most effective way to start to elucidate what's really happening with this body, with this person.
Now, I know that you have your own psychotherapy practice in Louisville, but you've also been working in areas that we're really seeing some of these mental health issues, whether it's depression or suicide, playing out to very negative degrees in the education system. So you've worked in Boulder Valley, and of course, we're seeing just the most awful statistics coming out around suicide with young people. You've also worked in the Boulder County Jail as well. And so many people say that since we've done a big shift in terms of how we treat people who are dealing with mental illness, we basically offloaded that. We emptied the institutions, but we didn't cure people. We didn't make people better.
No.
They're just now
relocated them.
They're
relocated
them. Yes. It's a different institution.
Yeah, we transferred
them. Criminal justice system.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
How did you see mental health issues play out when you were working in the jails?
Well, of course, I say of course because medication, of course, was the primary or one of the primary interventions, which is essential. And it's used, you know, in the schools as well. And it's used in nursing homes as well, which is to placate people, subdue them.
I often think it's a behavior modification.
It is behavior modification. It's to ensure some degree of safety and security and confinement in more ways than one. So it isn't really a treatment as far as transformation. It's not really rehabilitation. It's not about exploring how'd you end up in jail, which has all kinds of other implications besides mental health issues. You know, that gets a little overdrawn at times, but there are many reasons why people end up in jail. And when I work with those people, I really want to know how they got in jail, like what's going on with you. But I also can respect, you know, in another sense, like correction specialists who are often, first of all, that's a very strange term when you think about the prison system or the jail system, correction specialists. But that's another story. They're very fearful a lot of times. A lot of these inmates are like, you know, trouble. And some people don't understand that in the jail also houses murderers and rapists and, you know, very intense people who can be very dangerous, and they can be in jail for a couple of years before they transfer out, you know, into the prisons if they're convicted. So there's a lot of fear all around, fear amongst the inmates, amongst themselves, and the whole kind of caste system, I could call it, with how inmates interact with one another. And I developed programs in the jail that included bringing in actually clergy people from the community to give talks, to just give some perspective on life in different ways than a lot of these people were accustomed to. We had a movie series. We did acting. We performed a couple of plays when I was working there. Just ways of expression, ways of not just sort of housing them and disappearing them, but more like giving them an opportunity to express themselves and be creative, even in under the most difficult circumstances. I also taught yoga and meditation in the jails, you know, because I thought these are ways of very deep exploring and insight into one's being, which to me has more of the flavor of rehabilitation. You know, let's examine ourselves. And, you know, as you may know this, that mindfulness has become increasingly popular as a program in the jails now. You know, when I was there, it was the 80s, early 80s, for about 8 years. But a lot of these things are, thankfully, starting to take more root in those systems.
Michael Altman will speak today at 11:30 at the Jewish Community Center on Baseline in Boulder as part of the monthly interface series. The topic is the medication conundrum. Does it serve or inhibit well-being? You can find out more at interfaceboulder.org.